welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 206 of the podcast. And it is the 5th of January 2015 as I record this. So happy new year! This is the first show of 2015 and I can't really believe it's here. I think I'm feeling the march of time more this year as I turn 40. So that's exciting and I'm sure I will do some kind of lessons learned post or something. Today I actually, because it's the first one of the year and I haven't started my interviews yet, I have an interview for you that is actually with me, or is more of a discussion between me and Mark McGuinness from Lateral Action about being a creative entrepreneur. And we talk about all kinds of stuff related to the author business. So if you haven't heard that interview, then I hope you will enjoy this. But a few things first before we get into that. First up, I haven't recorded this, you know, I've recorded in advance because I went to New Zealand. So I am obviously now back and still a bit jet lagged. But I had a good trip. It was mainly a family trip. My husband is from New Zealand, so we're visiting family. And I lived in New Zealand for 7 years. So I've pretty much done all of the New Zealand tourism. But we did have a couple of days scuba diving up north, went out to the Poor Knights Islands, which is always lovely. And so that was good. And important, obviously, to get sunburnt and bitten by mosquitoes in the middle of the winter. So that was fun. And what was kind of a highlight for me was the actually had a meetup kind of speaking thing in the Auckland Library, Auckland Central Library at the Marae there, which was amazing. So I had originally thought about organising coffee for a couple of indie authors. And once I actually sent an email out, we turned out with 90 people who came to the library. So that was amazing for many reasons. It was actually the very first meetup of cross-genre indie authors in New Zealand. So which is so cool. And I had so many emails and tweets from people afterwards saying they were so happy to meet a whole load of other indie authors and they didn't even know that those people were around. So it was great. I mean, the romance ladies always seem to network and know each other, but many of the people in the room didn't know each other. So first up, you know, wanted to kind of encourage anybody who is in, you know, well, wherever you are in the world, you may be surprised that there are more indies. And you can use a site like meetup.com to organize something where you are. It's so important to have like-minded people to meet up with in person, in my opinion. So that's a really good thing. I was kind of stunned, actually. And it also reminded me of when I went to Stockholm earlier, last year, September or something like that, when, you know, there's this sense of a beginning, a sense of a market and a load of authors where the country just hasn't gone off yet. Ebooks have not gone mainstream. And in New Zealand, people are still reading books that cost $35, and 35 New Zealand dollars being about £18, be about 22-25 US dollars, which is just crazy. It's like three times the price of a print book in the UK, maybe even four times the print book. So it's a market at the moment where people are not reading as much. Certainly when I moved from print in Australia to Kindle, I began to read five times or more the number of books I used to read. So I really see New Zealand as an emerging market. I know it's a small market, but, it's very cool. So exciting times in New Zealand. And I hope you had a good Christmas and a good New Year. Next thing, I just have, yesterday, the day before, written a quite a ranty post, I think, because, you know, everyone's writing the roundup of 2014 articles, and there's been some really good ones, but also lots of doom and gloom about Kindle Unlimited. We've had the new EU tax law, the VAT on digital, which has affected everyone on their Amazon Kindle prices. And if you haven't gone in and checked your prices and potentially changed them, you still need to do that. So a lot of teeth gnashing, I've called it. And I posted a very long article, it's 2,500 words, on January the 3rd, kind of ranting about this. First of all, talking about, you know, the end of the gold rush, and kind of laughing because I never saw a gold rush. I'm not sure about you. But I would have loved, you know, I've been doing this since 2008, and I should have been part of any gold rush, but I certainly haven't. So I think that's probably the truth for most people. So I just wanted to put that out there. Sometimes people have the wrong impression of things. So I wanted to say, you know, this isn't easy. This is not easy job as such. This is, if you love it, it's the best thing in the world, but it's not easy. And Chris Rush had a really good post calling 2014 the year of the quitter, because many authors have discovered that writing is hard, publishing is hard, making a living with your writing is hard. And, you know, I thought this was obvious, but clearly not. But anyway, and Russell Blake posted a good article, and so really I'm just, you know, saying what you need to do to carry on is, you know, write what you love for people who love to read that type of thing. You know, like, my own books are not rainbows and kittens and happy endings. They're supernatural power and good versus evil and, you know, fight scenes and explosions. I love all that. So, yeah, I mean, I will continue to write what I love, and not try and hit some kind of gold rush special category or whatever. So long-term quality product that will sell over time, and also that you're proud of, a body of work that you are proud of for the long term. There's no point. I mean, like I said about feeling the march of time, there is no point in spending your precious hours writing something that you're not proud of. So don't do that, people. Don't do it. Also thinking global. So I just mentioned New Zealand, which I'm excited about. A lot of people moaning are those whose income has dropped from ebooks in the US on Amazon. That is very specific income. So if selling ebooks in the US on Amazon is your only stream of income, then you should be worried. Absolutely. But if you spread your income on multiple sources, so you can be on all the big four ebook platforms plus all the little ones, you can do print, you can do audiobooks, and then you can, you know, think about all the different countries. So you know, there's just so much opportunity. It's crazy. So think global, and also multiple streams of income. So I talk a bit about as I will do in the interview to come, but, you know, multimedia courses, merchandising, audiobook stuff, narration that I'm talking about, affiliate sales, which are, you know, fantastic, professional speaking, and all kinds of other things. But mainly I wanted to kind of inspire you to write something magnificent in 2015, because, you know, you want to be remembered and write something that's important, then write something magnificent that you care about. And if it takes a bit longer, then so be it. That's what I'm thinking this year. I hope that helps you a bit. I also had I put my goals up, which I do every year, beginning of every year. So January the 1st, put my stuff up, basically creating new things in the world and becoming a better artist, really. This is what's so funny. I think Stephen Pressfield, you know, because he's my muse, says in Turning Pro or something, you know, the life of the professional is easy in that, or not the life of the professional is easy, but something like, you know, as in, you know what to do every day. You don't have to think about what to do, because you are writing, you are learning, you're getting better at your craft. That's what you do. You know, what is there to talk about? You know, you're doing the same thing every day. So yeah, that's exciting. And I'm obviously going to commit to the podcast for another year and the blog, and I'm going to be doing more on YouTube and get doing some Q&A sessions. So I'll have a link for that in the next show, I think. Yeah, so that's quite cool. What else? Oh, yes. So funny. This is the book launch, the kind of the book launch thing now. So Gates of Hell is now live and available in ebook format on all ebook stores. And I definitely recommend you check it out for the cover alone, because the cover's awesome. I love it. But what's hilarious, of course, is I got up this morning, checked that it was live, bought it on Amazon, because, you know, obviously you need to go buy the books. So went and bought the books on all the stores, and then went to the library and did some writing. It's like the launch is no longer anything. The launch day particularly is just nothing, you know. So and what I'm focusing on, of course, now is getting some reviews on before I do some, you know, an announcement on the blog and shout about it a bit. But yeah, anyway, if you want to check out Gates of Hell, here's the blurb, just in case you're interested. When the last of the remnant is murdered at the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, arcane agent Dr. Morgan Sierra is drawn into the hunt for a supernatural key. She's joined by agent Jake Timber, who must face his own fears as they decipher clues left behind by Kabbalist scholars. From ancient sites in Spain to Israel and the Czech Republic, Morgan and Jake must follow the trail to the key, while evading Adam Cadmon, a man consumed with a lust for dark power. As the planets align, Morgan and Jake race against time to find the key and destroy it before the devourers and the polluted of God emerge from the gates of hell to ravage the earth. Da da da! Yeah, so, it's quite dramatic. And it's funny because I woke up this morning and half of me really loves this book. Like, it's a decent book, in my own opinion, which is good. And then you have this kind of crippling self-doubt, which is, it was a good book a month ago, and now I feel like, everyone's reading my mind, and what if it's terrible? And well, not what if it's terrible. I don't really feel like that. I feel, what if people think I'm a nutcase? That's often what I think these days. Anyway, what else is going on? Yes, so what I did was go to the library this morning and get over my self-doubt by doing some writing. And I've started on One Day in New York, which I have an alternative title for, but we'll see. But it's set in New York, and it's Jake Timber on his own. It's Jake's first book on his own. And what was great is when I left the book just before Christmas, when we went to New Zealand, I really thought I would finish it in New Zealand, but I didn't do any writing at all. But I had left it at a point where I really didn't know what was going to happen next. So of course, today I sat down and read what I'd done, and trusting emergence, which is what we do, I found an awesome location for the penultimate scene and basically sketched out the rest of the book. And so tomorrow I can actually start writing a scene, and I know where it is set. So for me, setting is a big deal, because, you know, it just is. Setting so important to me. So yeah. All right, so that will do for the waffly bit. And yeah, I have lots of exciting things coming up on the podcast. I have quite a lot of people booked. The next show is going to be on Kindle Kids, the new Kindle Kids platform, which I'm really excited about, which is the, I presume, similar kind of idea to iBooks Author, but on Kindle, specifically for, you know, the Kindle Fire, which is fascinating because it seems that Kindle, Amazon's going after the same market as iBooks, you know, have taken kids markets all over the world now with free iPads for schools and stuff. So that's interesting. And I have a whole load of really interesting interviews coming up. One with Chris Ducker, who writes about outsourcing. I've got, she says, looking through the list, lots of people coming on, and I am doing lots of speaking. That was the other thing I was going to mention. I'm at the PubSense Summit in Charleston, South Carolina, in March. So if you are in America or want to come and check that out, the website is, let me just find it, it is pubsensesummit.com. That was easy. PubSenseSummit.com, pubsensesummit.com. And that is March 22nd to 24th in Charleston, South Carolina. So I will be there. All right. So this podcast episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, where I'm now selling in 63 countries, which is exciting for me, up from 62. And the little map on Kobo Writing Life helps me to learn geography. And the newest country this month is the Northern Mariana Islands, I should say, which I had never heard of. Clearly still don't know much about. And I sold one book there. So that is awesome. And I'm sure that's a growth market, but it's always so exciting when I find a new country. And this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to everyone supporting on Patreon, and a shout out to new sponsors. And I've been collecting these since I went away. So thank you to Lisa Rivero, Caroline Mitchell, Christine Myers, Annie Caldwell, known as Annie Banani, the balloon storyteller, Liz Gelb O'Connor, and M. Terry Green. Thank you to all of you guys and to everyone supporting on Patreon, which is basically like an ongoing Kickstartery idea where you pay per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month, and giving just $1 if you like, or as much as you like, $3 or $5, whatever. So it can be less than a coffee a month. So if you would like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/thecreativepen. That's patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or of course, you can buy my books. Thank you so much. And let's get on with the interview after a short word from our sponsor.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Self-Publishing and Author Relations at Kobo. Wanted to tell you a little bit about Kobo Writing Life, which you can find at kobo.com/writinglife. It is the free do-it-yourself platform for getting your books published into Kobo's catalog. One of the reasons why you may want to log in directly to Kobo Writing Life rather than coming through a third-party aggregator is that it gives you tighter control over your books. One of the things you can use for tighter control is the ability to set your price in 8 different currencies, take advantage of pre-orders, and schedule price promotions. Lots of great opportunities available for Kobo Writing Life, and you can learn a little bit more at kobowritinglife.com. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to lateralaction.com. This is Mark McGuinness, and I'm very pleased to welcome Joanna Penn. Hi, Jo. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, it's a real pleasure. So, many of you will know Joanna already, but for those of you who are new to her work, she leads a double life. Firstly, as J.F. Penn, author, New York Times and USA Today best-selling author of, you call them thrillers with an edge. Can you just explain what exactly they are? What kind of an edge is it?
Yeah, so it was funny because, you know, I mean, not, you don't need a tagline as a fiction author, but my friend CJ Lyons, who you've had on Lateral Action, who's brilliant, you know, she has a great one, thrillers with heart. And I was thinking, you know, what do I write? And I write I write action adventure, but I also write supernatural things. And I write on the edge of horror, on the edge of action, on the edge of, you know, paranormal, supernatural, religious, you know, so that this edge for me is the edge that you walk in this world, I guess, between what could be a one genre or another, what could be faith versus science, what can be spirituality versus religion. So that's kind of my edge. I feel like most books I write, I'm walking some kind of edge.
Right, so there's quite a few edges in there. All right, and then, so that's by day, and then also by day, but maybe other times as well, you are Joanna Penn, host of the Creative Penn podcast and blog, and author of an ever-expanding series of non-fiction books for creatives on topics like presentation skills and marketing books. And the reason we're talking today is that Jo has written a really great book. It's called Business for Authors. Have I got the title right?
Yes, Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur.
That's right. Okay. So, and long-time readers and listeners at Lateral Action will know that one of the big things I've been trying to encourage people to do is to stop thinking like needy artists or freelancers living hand to mouth, and start thinking and acting like creative entrepreneurs. So take your art, your creativity, and unlock some of the value of the intellectual property that you're creating each time you create a piece of art, and start to create a thriving business around that. And Jo is one of the exemplars of this. She's one of the people I say, look at Jo, look what she's doing. So I think it's a really great book. And I want to say up front, although obviously it's called Business for Authors, it's a lot of the content is relevant whether you're a writer or you're a designer or you're another kind of creative. Some of it is obviously specific, but the fundamentals, I think, are going to be very relevant. So don't think, oh, no, I'm not an author. This isn't going to be relevant for me. Trust me, there's going to be a lot in what Jo says that will touch a chord if you're self-employed as a creative.
It's funny you say that, actually, because I started out as How to Be a Creative Entrepreneur. It was, the first draft was aimed at, I had a whole section for, you know, Etsy people and, you know, designers, and had some for sculptors and artists. And, you know, because you're right, pretty much everything in here is, it's how to run a small business. But as we know, you can't write a book that's really wide, and how to run a small business is just way too wide. In the same way that my How to Market a Book is essentially, you know, the principles of how to market anything, with a couple of chapters about Amazon, you know, that I think. So thank you for saying that, because I agree. It really is just a business book for creatives.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, because logically you're right. It is how to run a small business. And yet the emotional side, I think, is so critical. And what I really like, particularly at the beginning where you address the whole mindset issue, and the resistance that a lot of us have, I certainly did, to anything to do with the very idea of business seems to be the work of the devil. And I love the way you reframe that, and the way you show that it's, give us the answer that you give in the book. What do you say to the creative person who says, I'm just not interested in running a business at all?
Well, I think, you know, there's two ways to look at it. Is, you know, the one person who really just isn't interested in business and is just doing this for a creative reason. And that, like, helping my dad publish his book for his 65th birthday, that was like just a creative project, something to say, I've done this. It was never going to be a commercial project. But for people, what's so funny is so many people say, oh, I'm not worried about business, I don't care about the money, and then they get all angsty when they don't sell any books.
which is kind of
you know,
something's
weird.
Not matched up there, is it?
No, it's not. And I think this is the big thing for creative professionals, and the biggest thing is, if you want to get out of your job, if you want to actually make a living as an author or as a, you know, a creative professional, you have to think about this other side of things. And if you leave it to other people, if you have an agent or a publisher and you just leave it to other people, things may well get out of control.
control. And, you know, there's been a lot of cases of people losing control of their money. Harper Lee with To Kill a Mockingbird, it's the saddest thing, you know, her suing her agent after whatever it is, 50 years, you know, the only book that she ever wrote, you know, this masterpiece, and she's at her age having to sue someone. So I think if people don't look after their own business, yeah, you can just lose, you can lose touch with all of that. And the other thing is that I think if you think about it at basic level, being a creating a business is one of the most creative things you can do. So I work with, you know, 11 other professionals in my work. You know, I collaborate with other authors. I've creating a business, creating wealth, creating something new in the world is just fantastic. And so I think when people use the word business, it can bring up, you know, pinstripe suits and things in the brain. But actually, it's all the exciting things about creating value from ideas, which is essentially what an entrepreneur is. So I am trying to reframe this as the most creative thing you can do is be a business person.
Well, you're preaching to the converted here. And I also know there's a lot of people, you know, everyone's at their own stage for this kind of journey. So, you know, I really wanted to bring this up right at the beginning for those of you who are thinking, I want to do my own thing, but maybe it's not even that I don't like the idea of doing business, but I'm not even sure I could do it. I mean, that for me was a huge thing at the beginning, was just having the confidence to think that I could do the business stuff. And also, I guess there is a very author-specific version of the question, which is, you know, the authors who say, well, I like the idea of, you know, self-publishing sounds great, but it also sounds like a lot of work. I would rather just have a publisher who does all the business stuff for me, all the marketing, all the distribution, and I just write my books. What would you say to an author who's coming from that place?
Well, I think, I mean, the world has changed quite a lot to what it used to be. And for one, a lot of publishers want authors who already have books that have been edited professionally. They want authors who already have a marketing platform, maybe a blog, an email list. You know, they want authors who are already in a network with other professionals. So you may well have had to start building all of this stuff already. You know, you and I know building a website at the beginning, it can be very daunting, in the same way as like writing a book at the beginning can be very daunting, but over time these things grow. So it's definitely a journey. But even if you get a publisher, you still have to think about, you know, let's just take the basics, you still have to think about income. And you know, things like that, people, authors often just assume that as soon as you get an agent or a publishing deal, the money just starts rolling in. And but realistically, there are lots of things about that. For example, most advances, if you get an advance, are split into percentages. So you might get one on signing, one on when the manuscript is finalized, and one on publication, which could be 2 years later. And then, you know, that's split between all different kinds of people. So it, even just doing the basic maths, if you have a publisher, is something you need to think about. And then things like caring about your contracts. For example, I have a terrible example of a friend of mine who signed a contract in New Zealand for full worldwide rights, all formats, and they only ended up publishing her book in New Zealand in print format. And I'm like, but you signed away everything and they're not even going to exploit all of those rights. So what I think what I'm trying to do with this book, and in general, is trying to educate authors and creatives to think about how much their work is worth, and then think about all the stages of the journey, which go also for us, go for the rest of our lives. So, you know, having to think about the longer term ramifications of signing away the rights, you know, for your whole life. I mean, you've got kids, right? Your kids can benefit from your books. I mean, that's amazing. But only if you set it up right. So these are some of the, I know this topic's kind of not sexy, but it's so important.
Well, it is if you get it right. Yeah, it is sexy if you get it right. And if you get it wrong, then it's profoundly unsexy.
Yeah, well, we're the ones rolling in the crystal.
Yeah, anybody who's watching the video version of that might... We might have to edit the crystal in.
That's a good idea.
All right. So that's the big picture of the whys. Maybe you could actually tell us a bit about your journey from writer to what you call now author entrepreneur. And just as a, you know, and just talk about what prompted you, what motivated you to go on that journey and how you found it.
Yeah, so I did theology at university, which is kind of a random degree, and then I became an IT consultant, really, you know, mismatch immediately. And I then spent 13 years working as an IT consultant, implementing accounts payable into large corporates, possibly one of the most boring things you could ever do, but very well paid. I traveled a lot, traveled around Europe and the US and Asia Pacific. So I had this kind of great travel-y life, but my daily work was A, boring, and B, kind of soul-destroying for somebody who had thought when they were younger, I thought I was creative, and every day this was bogging me down. So I spent 13 years trying to escape my job. and I tried various things. I ran a scuba diving business in New Zealand, and I did property investment, and none of that worked for me. And I just couldn't figure out how did I end up with a house and a husband and a car and all the things you're and a great job and good money, all the things you're meant to want in life, and not be happy. So I started to write a book. I started to read a lot of self-help and then write self-help for myself. This was like 2006 now. And essentially that first book, I wrote it, and then I started to learn about the publishing industry, discovered how long it would take to get a book deal, decided I was not interested in waiting or asking permission to do anything, started to learn about self-publishing, started blogging, and that kind of started me on the journey of writing. So at that point I was a writer, but just going back, like you say, the kind of mindset. Back in 2006, I had an affirmation, which was, I am an author, I am creative. And I couldn't even say I am creative out loud, you know, back then. I couldn't even say it because I did not believe it. And to say I am an author as an affirmation was, I couldn't imagine it at that point. And I started off saying it in my head, and then eventually I managed to say it out loud. And that was a mindset shift that started me into, you know, starting a blog, starting the Creative Pen, which at the time seemed really, really arrogant. And then from there, it's pretty much been, I've just written more books. And then I had another shift in 2009 when I did a podcast interview with a friend, Tom Evans, about writer's block. And I said something like, I could never write fiction. And he said, well, why not? And I said, well, I would have to write something like Umberto Eco's The Name of the Rose, or it would have to win. It would have to win the Pulitzer Prize, because I went to Oxford and my mum's an English literature professor. I can only write that kind of book and be acceptable. And he really changed my mind. And then I went on to start writing thrillers, and then here I am now. So it's kind of a crazy journey, but I wanted to point out the number of years. We're in 2014. So this is 6 years from, you know, my first book, and eight years since I had that affirmation.
Right. So it doesn't happen overnight. It's like writing the book itself.
Yeah. Exactly. It really is. And I want to stress that, you know, this book, Business for Authors, it contains everything I've learned from like 13 years as a business consultant and 6 years as an author. And for most people, if you're at the point of saying, I want to write a book, and that's as far as you are, you haven't written the first book yet, there's a whole lot of things to be thinking about, you know, before you have a business. But I hope that some people will actually want to do this as a career now, because it is viable. This is what's so exciting now. It is a viable business now to be an author.
And at what stage did you say, okay, so you were learning your craft as a writer. At what stage did you say, okay, but I need to start building a business around this? Did you do one then the other, or did you do them more in tandem?
Well, the first book, I had thought at that point, I learned about blogging. I mean, you and I both know Copy Blogger, and, you know, I was reading blogs like that. I think that's when I first came across you. I think I did one of your courses that you did with Brian Clark.
Yeah.
And, you know, met people like Johnny B. Truant, who now is also a fiction author. And,
yes.
You know, it's this crazy space we're in. But I started learning about blogging and I thought, OK, I'm going to become a blogger, like, because I knew I wanted to get out of my day job. Mm. So I thought I'll be a blogger. I'll write nonfiction books and I'll be a professional speaker. So I started to train up as a professional speaker and started speaking for income and things. So I knew I was going to get out of my day job somehow. I knew I could not implement any more accounts payable systems. So I had this goal of getting out of my day job. But when I started writing fiction, I started selling courses to authors. So I did sort of veer into the nonfiction, blogging, professional speaking angle. Then I started writing fiction. I left my day job in 3 years ago now, September 2011. And at that point, I was making probably 90% of my income, which was a lot less than as an IT consultant, but 90% of it was nonfiction, professional speaking and blogging related courses. Mm-hmm. But then in the last couple of years, I've been writing more and more fiction. My income split has really shifted. So it's now up to about 45% fiction income and still professional speaking. I've been in Stockholm recently. I'm off to Frankfurt next week. So that's still a big part of it. And then I also still blog. So I still blog, I podcast. So I have, you know, like yourself, as an entrepreneur, this is why I use the word entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Most people in our space don't have one income stream. If they did, that would be like a day job. You know, and I really don't believe in having one income stream. I think it's, you know, super dangerous. So that's kind of where I am now, is I have, and even if I end up 100% fiction, I still have lots of different books and nonfiction, I suppose. And also I sell on all the different platforms as well as from my own website. So basically my business now is a kind of conglomeration of all of these different things to make up a very good full-time income.
Right. Okay. I'd like to pick up on what you said just now about it is now a viable career to be an author. Mm-hmm. Because as well as your own personal journey over these past 3 years, there's been big changes in the whole publishing industry. Mm-hmm. And I can relate to what you're saying. I mean, I started off in terms of the writing aspect of my business. Blogging was a big part of that. And I was offered several book deals by publishers, and I always looked at it and thought, how can I afford to write that? Because, you know, the terms on offer were just so, unenticing. But, of course, in those days, you would write a book as a business card in order to generate money for income. But my blog was kind of doing that for me. But it's really through your enthusiasm and CJ as well, the whole self-publishing revolution got it to the point where I realized, oh, okay, now I can write a book. Mm. So just maybe talk us through that whole change in the publishing landscape and critically why it makes it much more viable to make a living or significant part of your living as an author.
Well, when I first started doing this, there was no Kindle. I mean, this is what's so crazy. Like 5 years ago, there was no international Kindle. Authors couldn't self-publish onto the Kindle. We couldn't, there wasn't even such a thing as Kobo, which is really big, you know, in Canada and here in England. We couldn't do audiobooks. We couldn't do easy print on demand. It's kind of just crazy how things have shifted. You know, you wouldn't be reading books on your cell phone, whereas now we see them everywhere. So what's happened with this technology shift, and America first, UK, Australia, you know, Canada are the markets that have really moved, and we're still seeing, you know, Germany's just starting to move. We're still seeing the kind of emergence of this in the rest of the world. But what it's meant to authors is you can now self-publish. Now, I don't like the term self-publishing. I like independent author, because professional self-publishers use profession, other professionals like professional editors and cover designers. So, you know, we don't do it by ourselves as such. But essentially, the financial shift is, instead of, like you mentioned, getting between 15, you know, well, even 7.5% to 20% royalty on a book, which is what you would generally get from traditional publishing, you can make 70% from Amazon. So that means when I sell an ebook at $4.99, I make $4, which is just crazy. and I can do print on demand, which is just for people who don't know, I upload a couple of PDF files, a cover and my interior, up to Amazon's CreateSpace. And then if someone goes onto Amazon today, they can order a print book. One copy is printed and sent to them. And if you're on Amazon Prime in America or the UK, you get it on the same day. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just absolutely crazy. Or if you look for my audiobooks on Audible, they're there as well, which I did a joint venture with a translator, with a narrator. I've also done translation joint ventures. So basically, I'm running a global multimedia empire as an individual. And it's cost me not very much money, because I pay editors, I pay cover designers, but it's free to self-publish. And this is like, I speak to publishers and they just can't believe it. They can't believe what we have now as authors. So, and then I know people listening might be saying, oh, but isn't it a load of crap, you know, which is the classic thing. But the main thing is that readers are not stupid. Readers will not buy a crap book. Reviews will get you, or it just won't sell at all, or it won't get noticed. And if people download a sample and it's not very good, they're not going to buy the book. So I don't think quality is an issue at all anymore. So essentially, the technology has enabled us to get our books out there and make more money per book. We can also sell direct from our websites if we do blogging and things like you and I do. And the other thing I want to challenge people on is, if you think about the books that you love, so, you know, just hold those in your head. Now say who published those books. And I bet you that most people can't name the publisher of those books. Most people don't shop by publisher.
Yeah.
They shop by author name, or they shop by title because they're looking for something specific. So if somebody, you know, wants to recover from deal with rejection and criticism, they might find your book because that's what they're typing in to Amazon. If they're looking for how to market a book, they might find my book. So people want their questions answered. They want education. They want inspiration. They want escape and entertainment. They're not necessarily buying by publisher. So, you know, essentially the other exciting thing for authors is you get a monthly income that actually comes direct to your bank account, and you have cash flow monitoring because you know how much you're going to earn 60 days later. So it's just, the business is revolutionized in terms of business.
Yeah, and I'll just second that. It is incredible, the tools that are available. I mean, to go and if you look at the quality of a CreateSpace paperback or Lightning Source, that's another system you can use. You can stick that side, if you've got a good designer, you need a really good cover, but you can stick that next to a paperback from one of the big five. And I've had clients who are designers say, I didn't realize it was self-published. So now the flip side of this is that we're being judged next to the offerings from the big five. So as Joe says, if the writing's not good, if the formatting's not good, if the cover's not good, readers are going to move on. But fortunately, anybody listening to this has got high aspirations of professionalism. So
yeah, and just to put it another way, I say to people now, do you go to a farmer's market at the weekend? You know, do you buy vegetables from? Yeah. Do you buy clothes from a vintage store or a market? You know, like I go to Spitalfields and buy stuff. Do you watch indie documentaries on iTunes? You know, do you, all of these types of things? Do you buy your gifts on Etsy or not on the high street instead of going to a chain store? You know, what's happening in the world is there's a shift to buying from creators. People want to buy local, buy from from the author. You know, they want to support creatives directly. You know, look at Kickstarter, look at Patreon, which I'm now using for my podcast. You know, people actually want to support industry, creative industries. So, and I put direct sales of my fiction on my website and my nonfiction only a few months ago, which is odd considering how long we've been selling courses directly from our website. But to my surprise, people would like to buy my ebooks from my website because they don't want to give the money to Amazon or Apple or the middlemen. So it's so interesting how this shift in the public's perception of indie and artisan, you know, Guy Kawasaki, and he wrote a book, Author, Publisher, Entrepreneur, uses the word artisanal publishing, that we actually care more because they are our books than a big five publisher who publishes millions of books. They don't really care. But we care because we're doing it in, you know, individually and carefully. So I think if you shift it to that way around, it's like, well, of course you want to do it yourself. You're a creative.
Yeah. And there was that really cool story a few months ago. In fact, it might have been on your podcast, Joe. There was some book fair and they were interviewing teenagers queuing outside. And they said, who are you here to see? And instead, they said, we want to see the indie authors, because that's who they wanted to be when they when they left school. And it was just so great that it's now starting to become something to aspire to, like you said. You know, and there's a really nice part in the book where you talk about looking at your young cousins and wanting to inspire, you know, who are very creative, and wanting to inspire them and say, you know, you can choose a creative career if you want to do it, and these are some of the tools to help you do it.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we're not saying that you have to earn loads of money being a creative, but both, I mean, you know, your kids, you would like them to be able to do whatever they want to do in their life, and having a really good income actually really helps.
I mean, there's not so many drawbacks as the other way around, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And I really feel this. I think it annoys me that this, you know, the myth of the starving artist in the garret, and that to be a good writer, you should be poor. It's kind of a crazy thing. And you and I both live in the abundance mentality of the internet, and generosity and the ever-growing pie. And, you know, when you start thinking that way around books and writing and creativity and, you know, the whole thing, it's so exciting. Every day I'm just thrilled to be part of this world, and the indie community is so generous as well. Everyone's always sharing what they know, mostly for free or in a $5 ebook. You know, you can find out what any of us know. It's just you know, there are no secrets. Everyone's helping. It's a great time to be an author.
Right. So let's suppose we're sold on that idea, and we say, okay, what do I need to do? Let's say I'm starting out, because another nice thing in the book is you've got the arc of the developing business and what we should focus on at different stages. So let's say I'm a complete beginner. Maybe I'm getting, you know, I've written my first book, or I'm on the way to having that done. Mm. What are the things I need to be focusing on the business side?
Yeah, I think if you haven't finished the book yet, like if you haven't even got a book out in the world, I would start by finishing the book. Because I actually think that a lot of people will write one book, but not, you know, a lot of people will stop at that point and realize that this isn't what they want to do. And obviously a lot of people will never even write one book, but I mean, you know, you've got the bug as well, haven't you now? I mean,
well, I've just finished my second book last week, so yes, I know how you feel.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and I've just launched today, and tomorrow I'm back in the library starting on the next book, you know. I mean, this is once you get the bug, but the thing is, you don't know if you've got the bug until you finish the first book. So I think don't be too distracted if you haven't finished even one book yet. That would probably be my main thing. And especially looking at, you know, working with editors, you know, getting the basics of finishing a product. I guess probably the main thing to think about when you're doing this is, if you want to do this as a business later on, you do have to be thinking around, you know, marketing stuff. You know, maybe you've started a blog, maybe you're thinking about what you want to do with your business, you know, understanding professional editing, professional design, all of the fundamentals that go into making a book. That's kind of the important thing, because that's going to be your primary product. And if people listening are not authors, then, you know, that's really the thing for any creative business. You need a product, whether your product is, as you have, coaching. Mm-hmm. You can't just become, you know, start coaching tomorrow, you know, from nothing. You know, there's time when we develop, I guess that's the developing the craft and the experience, yeah, type of thing. But then I think once you've actually got the book done, then your big challenge is realizing that nobody cares. Which I think most people, I mean, you think that's so, right?
Yeah, so there's the great cartoon that Hugh MacLeod did on Gaping Void that just, it's like the, you know, the classic town sign, welcome you to the town. It says, welcome to Nobody Cares, population 6 billion. And that's really tough, because when we've put all the love and the energy and care into creating something, and you look out there and just think, well, guess what? There's a load of others who've done just the same. So what now then the question is, what do I do to actually get people to care?
Yeah, and this is where you realize that you haven't made $1 million from one book, and you actually have to learn about marketing. Or if you've been published by a publisher, you generally find that your book doesn't, you know, everyone doesn't celebrate.
About marketing.
Yeah, basically you have to learn about marketing. And it's interesting when you talk to agents and publishers and you read publishing industry blogs, they say the most disappointed person is the author whose book has been published about six weeks after publication, because that initial launch fun has worn off, the book has dropped down the charts, and now the publisher's moved on to the next author, and that's it, you know. There's this disappointment, and I think there is a psychological shift, is that you have to go, okay, so it's up to me then, regardless of how the book is published or whatever your business is, now I have to start to learn marketing. And that happened to me when I printed 2,000 copies of my first book, and they sat in my house in Australia. This was before the Kindle, and I didn't know about print on demand. I printed 2,000 copies and then went, okay, how do I sell these? And I ended up putting most of them in the landfill, because I discovered print on demand. But it was a great lesson. I'll never forget that one. But essentially, at that point, you have to learn about marketing. Then you make another decision. They're like decision points all the way. Do I enjoy this enough that I want to go through it again? So it's because it's not just writing the book, it's then the marketing side. And if, like us, you know, this is marketing. You and me having a chat is marketing. This is the thing. If you reframe marketing into something fun, like both of us like writing, so we blog, you know, both of us enjoy Twitter. We like going to events. We both speak. These are things that we do, and other people can do, and they are marketing. So you have to find the marketing that you enjoy, and then you can essentially consider what you want to do next. So are you going to go deeper into one genre? Are you going to switch? Are you going to, you know, what are you going to do with your creative products that work into some kind of business model?
And what are the things I should be looking out for? I mean, let's assume I'm not making $1 million with my first book in 6 weeks. But what are the things I should be tracking that let me know, okay, I'm going in the right direction? What I'm doing now is going to grow the business for the long term. What are some of the indicators I should look for?
Well, I think like any small business, you should have a website and an email list kind of sign up, because one of the best, like what will happen with your first book is it's unlikely you're going to have an email list of lots of people. I mean, most of us start with zero. Well, everybody starts with zero. But if you start an email list off the back of your first book, by the time you have your second book, you should have 10, 100, 1,000 people on that list who will be ready for the next book. So that's a really sensible thing to do, is make sure at the back of the first book it says, if you enjoyed this, sign up here to get something else for free or whatever, and be on my list for your next book. So that's one thing to do. And then the next thing is to start writing another book, whatever that is, or, you know, if you're going to use that as part of your business think about how, you know, create a workshop out of that book, or however you're going to repackage it. But essentially, you know, as we said at the beginning, one income stream is dangerous. You're never going to make a living from one product. It just doesn't happen at all. So you have to think about, what are the other products I'm going to create? And then in terms of measuring, you know, you could even be, for fiction writers, you know, we often do measure word count. I don't think it's so common within other industries, but, you know, to actually, I say now, I measure my life by what I create. So if I'm not creating regularly, actually, and by creating, I mean, here is a finished book, then, you know, I'm not doing my job properly. So it's really tracking that, you know, you could track word count, you could track, you know, chapters by the end of the month or something, so you know you're ticking towards your goal. And at this point, you probably have another day job or another income stream because, you know, as I said, it's not a full-time income.
Yeah. And, okay, so I'd like to just reiterate what Joe said about the importance of an email list, because if you're looking around thinking, should I blog, should I tweet, should I have a Facebook page or a podcast, whatever, all of those things are kind of nice if you enjoy them and they can all be done really effectively, but none of them, certainly in my experience and most people I talk to, none of them will have the impact of an email list. And if you think about it in your own experience, you don't see every Facebook update that stream. You don't see everything that goes in your Twitter stream, but you probably see just about every email that hits your inbox. And that's the reason why email is so powerful. So, you know, one metric you can start tracking from day one is, how many subscribers am I getting? And even if it's only in the tens or you know, scores, yeah, or one, well, that's another potential reader for the next book. Which is a huge, you know, that's an asset that you're building for the business.
Mm. And the other thing is just, you know, we've got to think about future proofing. So there are some people who believe you should go all in on Amazon. But, you know, I saw a documentary with Jeff Bezos and Charlie Rose last year. And Jeff said, you know, Amazon will be disrupted in the same way that Amazon has disrupted other industries. You know, it will be disrupted. Like, we've just seen Alibaba IPO, you know, come out and people going, oh, this is new. You know, this is something interesting. And I think if you have an email, if you own your own website and you pay for hosting, you own your own email list, you own the rights to your products.
Yes.
Nobody can take this business away from you ever, you know, because you own that stuff. And if all of this goes wrong, you know, if Facebook disappears, if Amazon disappears, if everything else goes, you'll still have your products, the rights you own, the website, and an email list. So I'm like you, you know, and also I think I'm a bit gun shy because in 2008, 400 of us, including me, got laid off on one day during the global financial crisis. And at the time, that was my one income stream. And when I got laid off, along with everyone else, I swore I would never rely on one thing again.
Right. So if there's one part of this recording that I could kind of highlight with yellow highlight, it would be this. Build your own assets, folks. Mm. More product, as in more books, that's intellectual property. Maybe we can talk about the rights that can kind of come out of that. More your own website, so you've got your own property online, and your own mailing list, which gives you a hotline to your readers. Mm. Now, those three things give you the foundation. It's like, I, you know, when people say to me, isn't it a bit risky being self-employed? And I say, well, no one can sack me.
and if you have an email list, if you create something they want, you can make money from, you know, selling people what they want. So that's how it works. And I know where we are, both you and I have been doing this a number of years now, and maybe we sound a bit blasé, but at the beginning we were both scared, and we both, you know, it was difficult, and it was, and you know, when I gave up my job to do this full time, there was a big self-esteem drop about, you know, people look at you funny and treat you funny when you don't have a proper job.
But, yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's not land of milk and honey, at least straight away. Look, no crystal here. Yeah, it's hard work. And, you know, it makes sense, obviously, not to be relying on that one book to be paying all the bills to begin with. But the joy of what Joe is describing here is you're building something.
Yeah.
You're building your artistic oeuvre, you know, your body of work. You're building the mailing list, the intellectual property, your web presence. If you do this right and you keep even just track it this month compared to last month, if you sold one more book than last month, got one more subscriber than last month, it's growing.
And I tell people to measure this in Olympic periods, because in 1 year you can feel like you haven't really got very far. But if you try and think about like where you were during the you know, the London Olympics, and then before that, whatever that was, the Beijing Olympics, and then if you think where you're going to be during the Rio Olympics, every 4 years things can really, really change. And I, between Beijing and London, I had become a fiction author, I'd left my job, you know, loads of big shifts had happened over 4 years. So you can definitely achieve this, you know, if you want this, but it takes time and it takes effort consistently. It's like, I say this, it's like diet and exercise. You know what to do, but it's one of those, it's simple, but it's not easy type of things.
Yeah. Okay. So let's back to our imaginary author. She's written the first book. She's building the mailing list, she's getting the first sales, the first reviews of the book, building the next one. What's the next phase of the journey?
Yeah, so realistically, the kind of the next bit is when you have a couple of books. So I think there's a jump at three, if three is within the same genre, or as you are nonfiction, you know, three to the same audience. So if you can sell one, they're likely to buy two or three. So there's a jump at three, there's a jump at five, and then things, you know, become more regular. You know, when you've only got one book, some months you might not earn any money at all from that book. But since I've had three books, I've earned money every month. And since I've had five, it's jumped up. So, I interview people, and again, this might sound crazy, but there are people who are making very, very good money who have over 15 books. So CJ Lyons would be somebody in that group. I just interviewed Steve Scott. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
He does nonfiction. Yeah, and he's got 42 books. They're all very short, though, I would say that. But the thing is, there is a business. You've got to think about your business model when you want to go full time. So when you've got maybe three to five books, you're really thinking, am I going to be able to leave my day job? Can I make this a full time career? So you have to make some decisions around what you're going to do next and start thinking about your strategy. You know, so for example, getting clear on your brand. That's when I really thought about, okay, I'm going to be JF Penn for my thrillers, because I'm not this shiny, happy person. I'm like this the dark little twisted thing. It's the shadow. You know all about the shadow.
Yes.
You know, that's my shadow. And so I wanted to split my brand. That was like a decision you make when you've done a couple of books, because we're all a work in progress, right? But it helps to have that. And then maybe you're writing a series. Maybe you decide my business model is going to be like yours is, you know, speaking, coaching, and books are a small part. Or like me, I've decided I want my speaking to be 20% of my income. I want my books to be 80%. So I'm working towards that. Thinking about scalable income, you know, I'm sure you've talked about this, but scalable is you create it once, it can earn you money forever, which is a book. Whereas speaking or coaching, you do it and that time is gone. So thinking about how your business model is going to work, and establish your criteria, I guess, for going full time. And that's what I did. So I had said, I have to be making this amount of money before I give up my job. So I was working I went to part time work. I was doing evenings, weekends before work, you know, until I was earning X amount. Then I could give up my job with the knowledge that I would have to go back to it if I couldn't sustain an income. So I think when you've got three to five books, you're really thinking about those types of issues.
Yes. And note, Joe is not saying leap and the net will appear or quit your job overnight.
No, I'm saying it took me, you know, it took me pretty much 3 years of working part-time to do this. And in fact, I'll tell this story because this is really important. Back probably 2004, you know, a while back, I had reached another, I just got divorced, my first marriage. I'm happily married now, but you know, at the time I just got divorced, I was miserable, and I quit everything. I sold my house at that time, quit everything in order to write the great novel, as you do. 3 months later, having written nothing except a few poems, angsty divorce poems, I went back to my day job full of kind of just, I can't do this, that I just could never do this, this is not me. My self-esteem crushed, and I didn't write again for another, 4 or 5 years. So I would say to people that you do not need to leave your job to write a book. In fact, it's better to write at the edges of the day, as Toni Morrison says. So I would get up at 5 and write for an hour before work. I would, in the evenings, I would blog and do social networking, and at the weekends I would write. So I think it's better to do that, work part-time and only give up your job when you're really certain and when you have money coming in.
Well, and that's a great example, Joe, of what we were talking about right back at the beginning, of the value of the business really is it will support your creativity. At that stage, you didn't have a business model and you didn't have the, you know, the infrastructure around you that would support you. And, you know, it's pretty soul crushing experience to go through. So, again, if anybody's thinking that there has to be a fundamental conflict between business and creativity, what you're describing is that the two, actually one supports the other.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, now, I mean, even when you're a full-time creative, you know, you still have to do all the other stuff. So it will always be a mutually supportive kind of side. And I hope you agree. I mean, you can't be creative all hours of the day. I mean, you can only, you know, you have that well every day, and then you do something else. So it's fantastic. But what I think I would also say to people, remember when I said I couldn't even say I am creative out loud? I didn't used to have ideas, and now I just overflowing with ideas. And that's something that happens more and more, as it's like a muscle, isn't it? You exercise that creative muscle, and over time it just, you know, and now the ideas for my books, I just have lists and lists of books that I'm going to write. And that only happens over time, basically. So be easy on yourself, people. Be nice to yourself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we could finish up by looking at maybe the later stage in the business. So I imagine the author's got a few books out. She's making significant income every month. Maybe she's even left her job. What are some of the things that she needs to be doing to really maximize the value of her work and to accelerate the growth of the business?
Right. Well, this is kind of where I am now. And writing this book, it was helping me shift phase from, you know, being a businesswoman and an author to I am CEO of my creative company, you know, and you only feel like a CEO when you know what you're doing. And writing this book helped me understand how it all worked. So one, you want to exploit your rights. So we talked a bit before about one manuscript is an ebook, a print book, an audio book. In English, it can also, that English, those three products can be sold all over the world in English. So indies can sell in 170 countries now. And I have personally sold in 58 countries. So that's in English, three products in English times 58. Then you can start looking at translations. So I'm now, I'm collaborating with 7 translators. I've got books. I know it's going off. I've got books in German, Spanish, Italian. I've just signed Portuguese for Brazil, Brazilian Portuguese. Right. All of those are joint venture partnerships, 50-50 royalty split. So I'm not even paying them up front, which is crazy because translators are creative people too, and they want to do this stuff. I really believe that collaboration is the future of creative business. I totally believe it. So that's one thing, is taking that one product, if it is a book, and turning it into multiple income streams. And then if you think that I've now got 12 books, each of those can become all of those multiple income streams, you can see how this is a valid business model, because you know, it really is endless and limitless how many things you can turn these things into. So that's one thing. And then you have to be considering things like your processes. So when you first self-publish a book, it's a bit complicated, you know.
yes.
In the same way as, like, you know, when you first use WordPress as a blogger, it's a bit complicated. You have to go through the process a few times. So for me now, as I said, I have 11 contractors. You know, I have my editors, I have my cover design, I have bookkeeper, you know, I'm doing my accounts right now. You have to put your processes in place as you develop your business properly. Then things like this, I have to mention it because I think it's really important if you want to, you know, expand, is the production plan. So the production plan, which, you know, you think of in like a factory, is, you know, I am going to, it's more like a promise. You know, you can say it's like a part of your business plan. You know, maybe writing a business plan is a good idea. But a production plan is, I will be writing this in this month, and therefore I can book my editor for this month. I can book my cover designer. I can see that I'm going to create 3 products next year. That's going to give me this type of cash flow. So when you actually start planning and, you know, forecasting and thinking about strategy, these are words that business people use. And I love, you know, I love the just the general, let's just be creative and make stuff attitude. But then you almost need to put on your other hat if you want to expand this. And I mean, I think I'm really talking to those people who are ambitious, you know, who want to earn really good money, of which I am one. And I think you are as well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we come from this side where we don't see these things as being mutually exclusive. Like, you know, and my friend, this is what's so great. My friends in this industry, many of them are making 6 and 7 figures from their, you know, their fiction and their books, which to me is truly exciting. So I think if you consider those type of things, you actually get your financials sorted. I'm amazed at how many creatives don't have a bookkeeper. I mean, I can't stand entering my receipts into QuickBooks or whatever. So, you know, I love paying my bookkeeper. And then, yeah, looking at the longer term view, that's just, there's been a good book recently, Good Strategy, Bad Strategy, by a guy called Richard Rumelt, which I really enjoyed, and was basically, strategy is what you don't do as much as what you do.
Yeah.
And that really helped me. And I've written about it in the book, is to say what I have to say no to, because you spend so much time when you're growing your business saying yes all the time.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you have to start saying no to everything.
Yeah. And it's really scary when you first start doing it, isn't it?
Yes. And I still struggle. And then I regret it later. I'm like, oh, why did I say yes to that? You know, and often, you know how it is as a speaker, people will ask you for stuff and then you'll be like, oh no, why did I do that? And so when you, and I think this goes in the business plan as well, is what I am. So for me, I am an author. I'm an author, a speaker, and an entrepreneur. And that's the order they are in. So every day I should be working around my author business, my speaker business is secondary, and the entrepreneur is a kind of overarching, but I used to sell courses and I'm selling them less and less now and focusing more on books. So knowing what you can say no to is really important as you become the CEO of your creative company.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jo. I mean, you know, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. From the little acorn of the first few words of the first book to this huge spreading oak tree of your multinational, multimedia empire. And it's really, I mean, you know, because we've been in touch for a few years and I've seen your journey. I've seen your business grow and the catalogue grow. And it really is inspiring to see this. And also, you know, the other thing I want to underline is Jo works insanely hard, like really, really hard. There's a reason why you've got, what, 11 books or something?
12
books in 6 years. I mean, that's a pretty impressive production rate. So thank you for your generosity. Honestly, I heartily recommend the book. And even, like I said, even if you are not an author, I would recommend you check this out. It's what, $5?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, it's really, you will get way more than $5 value even if you're not an author. If you are an author, then, and you're serious about making this a career, you really should read it. It's great. So presumably it's on Amazon and all the usual online. You know, where do people go to get the book? Where's the best place to?
Yeah, so it's available now as an ebook on all platforms, as a print book on Amazon and Barnes and Noble, and also an audio book. So if you go to thecreativepen.com/businessbook, all the links are there, and that's Creative Pen with a double N.
Yeah.
But no, thanks so much for having me, Mark. It was great to talk to you, and you continue to inspire me as a creative businessman as well.
Well, thank you, Jo. Oh, and the other thing I want to point people to is, A, you've got a great blog at thecreativepen.com, the double N, and also Jo's podcast I listen to every week. And it's really one of the very best ways of getting to know what's going on in the publishing industry. You always have amazing guests on. You learn all kinds of stuff. So if you're interested in publishing, writing, publishing your own books, have a listen to The Creative Pen. And within a few weeks, you'll be an expert in the current state of self-publishing.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Mark.
Okay, my pleasure. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.